Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Season 1, Episode 5 of 6 Feet Under, an open book, is over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps. That's right, it's the 6 Feet Under podcast, and we are revisiting the critically acclaimed HBO series episode by episode. My name is Ariel, and I am joined by my co-host, Amanda. It's your turn, Amanda. Scrabble.
I love Scrabble. Just give me a second. I need to adjust my cans of cat food here, Ariel.
Listen, I don't have a lot of cans of cat food laying around the house, but if I did, now I know that I should save them because you never know when you might need them.
Yeah, get a load of those cans on that one.
Yeah, the metaphor is not lost. No. Or I guess more the simile, whatever. Mm. Yes. So it's an open book, as I am with you most times. Mm-hmm. This is the fifth episode. It's not, we're like almost halfway. That's crazy.
Yeah. We're really moving through at a great clip. Another great episode here of 6 Feet Under. Really fun. I can't wait to get into all of it with you. The conversation is popping on the Discord, Ariel.
Yes, people are talking. Mm-hmm. That's great, about this like ancient show. as we speak about some aged stars of the small screen.
Oh, yes.
In this mm-hmm. episode.
People are really catching it. Like now I think we've been doing this for a couple weeks. People are taking advantage of the show being on Netflix. I know that this is a show that was on like a lot of people's list of like, I need to see that eventually, mm-hmm. just because right. it has, this like critically acclaimed reputation. So definitely people should continue to listen along with us and follow us on postshowrecaps.com/6feetunder. Subscribe to our 6 Feet Under so they don't miss anything.
Yes, you don't want to miss anything. You never know what's going to happen. This episode is, what'd you think? I really liked it. I mean, I'll be honest. I like all the episodes. I feel like any time spent mm-hmm. with the Fisher family, in my estimation, is time well spent. And we always get our case of the week, if you will.
Yeah. I think that, again, like I do really, I think that the procedural, like with the cold open and case of the week kind of format, like I really enjoy that. I think it's like a little bit of a lost art that's kind of been like relegated to like the very kind of tired like procedurals on CB, like the NSIs and the
NCIS,
you know, like, yeah. NCIS, whatever it is.
I love how you combine CSI and NCIS.
Poker Face came out earlier this year. Like, I think that there was a lot of excitement about taking that format and making it fresh and going back to 6 feet under. I really think that that format like provides so much, like in terms of, you know, setting expectations and giving a framework in which to play creatively. And I definitely think that 6 feet under like does that. They really do kind of like push the envelope of what each death can expose about the characters and their inner lives. This is an exciting one, Ariel. Mm-hmm. This is not your everyday, you know, died in their sleep or like this is a real star this week.
Yeah, this is murder. This is cat murder.
Cat murder.
Which, you know, I'm allergic to cats, and now I'm thinking,
oh yeah,
that's probably good. You know, cats are adorable, but if I'm gonna get murdered by a cat in my bathtub, then I don't want that. You
it
know,
was it's really manslaughter, I would say, like not murder. I don't.
That's true. That's fair.
Premeditated.
Right. That's true. I wouldn't say it's probably not in the first degree. Maybe like the second or third degree. But you know, it's funny you say, you know, the format, the case of the week format, the procedural part. Like, because I completely agree. Like, remember when they made TV shows? Remember when episodes were just episodes and seasons of TV weren't like 8 to 12 hour movies expressed by the showrunners? I think for sure using the episodic format as a as like a venue for showcasing things about your character, it's a tried and true tradition. And you know, the one thing that immediately came to mind was Grey's Anatomy, which is always on my mind, unfortunately, and always just around the corner. And here we get a lovely cameo from a certain Sandra Oh.
A young Sandra Oh, like honestly, like really selling this like relatively minor role. You know,
she doesn't even have a name in the credits. She's just, I believe, just a porn starlet or something like that. But
because St. John was like a sister to her.
some of the lines that she had to say, I did wonder, like, would you send that along? Like, as you're, you know, you have the reel if you're an actor and you're like, okay, this is what I was in. I do remember her being in, she was the principal in The Princess Diaries. Is that the one with Anne Hathaway?
Yeah, I think so.
She was the principal in that one. I always remember her like three lines that she has in that movie. Because she
what
always...
range on this she...
She's professional.
Yeah,
she's professional in this episode in a different way. She has so much range.
Work is work. We respect
work
all
is
work.
Yeah. Definitely, when we do respect that. But it's hilarious. Some of the references that they just, and I mean this just across the season, that they're making. Like we talked about Trader Joe's the other time, and like how that wasn't. That was like a very local thing back then, but not like as you know, well known as it is now, and certainly on like the East Coast where I am. And yeah, they're always like little examples of that around, and I yeah, you appreciate them. It's a time capsule, but also it's just that's just life.
It is.
So let's get into our quick plot recap episode.
Well, I want to call out that this episode was written by, you know, Alan Ball, obviously the show creator, and directed by Kathy Bates. Yes,
Kathy Bates. Yes, written by Alan Ball. Kathy, you know, I like to think that Kathy Bates, you know, she probably had some say in this episode. I mean, obviously she's a director,
she's
but I mean,
director,
like as far as the writing, the character dynamics. You know, I like to think anytime Kathy Bates is involved in something, I'm like, I want her to be.
She's
going to
leave her stamp. Yeah, I don't know if we see Kathy Bates as a actor again. This is spoiler free, by virtue of the fact that I barely remember anything. But I do know that she directs 5 episodes of 6 Feet Under across the series. So
yes, I may or may not remember if she shows up, and I won't say.
Wow,
I won't say. But I will say that this recap is quick. So please please don't go. Just listen. Just, you want to know what the episode is about, we're going to tell you, and then we're going to talk about it. So as I said, it's cat murder time. Vivica St. John, a famous porn star, famous to some, you know, maybe not David, but, you know, the Nates of the world. She's killed in her tub when her cat purposely... This is Jess Sterling famously
editorializing,
editorializing, just like I did before this, that the cat purposely knocked the hair curler into the bath. It sounds like you're the lawyer for the cat and you're trying to get the cat.
I do. I think I have a strong case.
Mm-hmm. But that is not the only electrifying thing that happens in this episode. Nate gets hoodwinked into a dinner alone with Brenda's manipulative parents. Woof, can't we talk about that? It turns out the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, as Brenda knew about the dinner and allowed Nate to be ambushed. That's not great. Nate learns that the Nathaniel tattoo that Brenda has on her lower back is a tribute to a dark children's book called Nathaniel and Isabel. And he also learns that Brenda is extremely intelligent to the point where she was studied as a child and had a book written about her. Wow. He also gets to meet the Nathaniel to Brenda's Isabel, who is her brother, Billy, and played by Jeremy Sisto. Meanwhile, David is given the opportunity to apply to be a deacon at his church that he, well, it's really his mother's church that he has now been going to again. It would be a boon possibly for Fisher and Sons because they would have business possibly coming from that, but would also mean ditching the accepting church that him and Keith have been going to in West Hollywood. Further strife occurs when David comes out to his brother, but then tells Keith it's not a good idea for Keith and David to attend the new church together. This is wild stuff from David. At least David gets to be deacon and a picture pews of full of sexy naked men. I mean, listen, if that was, no disrespect to a real life church, if that was an option, I mean, I'm just saying some people might be interested in that.
There's a lot of different ways.
Right. And you, if you're worshiping the human form, then that's like, you know, like godliness and all that, you know, we were made in his image. I don't know. Claire and Ruth have an exciting adventure in an attempt to bond with her daughter. Ruth rents movies from Blockbuster and they watch The Nutty Professor. Apparently there's a lot of flatulence in that movie. When that doesn't work, they visit their all too perky and loving cousins, their strange relationship is even more magnified. Ruth admits her infidelity to Claire in a moment of honesty, and Claire takes advice from her guidance counselor, invites her mother to watch a movie together. So, you know, some relationship progressions, some, you know, possibly taking a step back, as Keith points out in this episode, you know, one step forward, one giant leap effing back, I think is what he says. And perhaps one moves towards better understanding, but we are still left wondering who set that building on fire and why did Brenda and Billy get matching lower back tattoos?
I'm really excited that we meet Billy in this episode, Ariel.
Yeah, we had heard Billy on the phone, and I knew immediately. I'm like, oh God, it's Billy. And one of the phone calls, it was, I don't think I'm mistaken, and I might just be like me reading into it. It very much sounded like Jeremy Sisto's voice. So I think there was like, he was looming very large. How did, you know, as someone like me who was like expecting, perhaps, worried about Billy showing up, how did you feel about his first appearance?
I was really excited because, I mean, Billy is so, you know, we do get, this episode, near the end of this episode, we're introduced to Billy, who's in a towel, like a very low slung towel.
This is the lowest rise towel I've seen in a long time, I will say.
It's amazing that towel is standing up. It's like, really, it's working. It's working.
It's working time. Really hard.
Really hard. It's working really hard. And he, you know, introduces himself to Nate in like the most like menacing, threatening way possible. And he does his whole like slapping my sister, my mother, my sister. We see the Isabel tattoo. It's if Brenda is, you know, we're going to meet the Chenoweth clan, you know, more extensively in this episode. And if people were thinking that Brenda was quite a bit and over the top, oh boy, did she come by it honestly coming from this family.
What a crew. No sign of Kristen Chenoweth. I was, no, you know, the lost, lacking, the yeah.
lost Chenoweth. She got the hell out of there.
She was like, Nate, you came back. You're a fool. I'm never coming back. I did keep expecting her to pop up, but you know, no spoilers, but you know, maybe in a, maybe.
She does. Yeah. Jeremy Sisto, plays Billy Chenoweth, also from Clueless, Ariel, mm-hmm. and you may recall him.
Oh yes. I'm well versed. I'm well versed. Mm-hmm. I worship at the altar of, yes. of Clueless.
yeah. I think Jeremy Sisto is just so hot, by the way.
I was getting some vibes. And listen, we are here to discuss any and all things. So I know, I will say for sure mm-hmm. that he is a whole ass vibe.
He is a vibe. He's a vibe. He's a lot.
He's a lot. Mm-hmm. And we see, what's interesting to me is like watching Brenda watch him interact with other characters, because mm-hmm. there's this level of like, yes, she's watching and she's concerned, but there's like a look on her face that we're not really capable of discerning quite yet. Like, we're not sure what it is that she's yes. so intent on monitoring.
Right.
But it is very clear.
Yeah.
Brenda Chen with, you know, played by Rachel Griffiths, does a really good job of like telegraphing on her face what she's thinking at times, like mm-hmm. she's, you know, observing people.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, we just get a tease of Billy in this episode, mm-hmm. the, you know, the towel notwithstanding. But I do think that the show has like pretty heavily telegraphed at this point that there's quite a bit of conflict and history and probably enmeshment in Brenda and Billy's relationship. And now we have Nate and Billy being aware of each other. So I'm very, very interested to monitor where this goes.
Yes. A very interesting bond, one that we're still exploring, mm-hmm. to your point. Another bond, though, in this mm-hmm. episode that I'd love to talk about, Ruth and Claire. This is sweet. Do you think they're going to go to spin class?
Oh my gosh.
That's the reference, by the way, that I was like, spin class. I can't imagine like 20 years ago knowing what the hell spin class was.
Yeah. That's a good question. I did. Like, I actually do remember I went to a spin class once. Like, so I actually became, you know, that we don't need to know my history with different workout classes, but I remember somebody convinced me in college to go to a spin class, which would have been like, you know, maybe like 2002, 2001. Mm-hmm. So in the ballpark of this time.
Of this, yeah.
And I went to spin class and it was so hard and I hated it. And the instructor yelled at me like so much because uh-huh. I wasn't trying hard enough.
Stop, like actually yelled?
Yes. And then made me like get off the bike and do push-ups because I wasn't like trying hard enough.
My mouth fell open.
I was like, F this is like spin class. But then I ended up like years later getting very into spin, and I was like spinning like three times a week until I was 8 months pregnant, and it was like a lot. But
I thought you were gonna say that I ended up marrying my
and now no actually Ariel, you can see in the background here I actually have my little spin
I see
in my podcasting studio. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, spin is a whole thing, but yeah, spin was pretty new at this time. This would have been like a kind of trendy, like, yeah, this was a hip show. I mean, I know it's dated now, but at the time it was very hip. The one thing that could probably bring Ruth and Claire together at this point is their mutual hatred of going to the, of spin class.
Getting up at 6 a.m. That's not great. Yeah, I love when Ruth wakes her up and she's like, get up or else they're going to make us go to spin class.
Yeah, as Claire said, I'd rather drive a rusty rail spike through my skull.
Through my skull. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that sounds painful, but your spin class experience. Oh,
it was really bad. Really, I don't know if in 2001 they were doing like the spin class, like with the black light and like the club music. Have you ever been
like
to one
of
those?
Oh, God, like the disco spin. Yeah. I have been to a couple of spin classes. It mm-hmm. is usually, you know, similar to you, a friend's idea or like some you know, work thing of like, oh, we got this discount. There's a gym in the building, you know, whatever, or not even discount, like a free, you know, come for this like free intro, whatever class. I didn't get yelled at. I think he was yelling like mostly at the class in general, but it was like a positive.
It was more like a Derek.
Yeah. Like, yes. Yes. We would love you Derek. Go, do you think that Jeremy Sisso would be a good spin instructor?
I mean, I'd probably show up to it.
I mean, you have to see, right? Like, is he one of the good ones or the bad ones? You need to see.
That some
yourself.
Of them are very good.
Some yes, of some of them are good enough that people like follow them on social media and stuff. That's what I've been told by my like my friends like will post. It was like friends of friends, acquaintances, right? I think they're called we'll post like, oh, I did this because I'm like, oh my God, that's so cool. But also like, no, I would never do that. but Ruth and Claire are in agreement that they would never do that.
They would never do spin class.
It's so nice to see them both trying in their different ways. Like, obviously it's a little painful, but also very familiar. Like that's, again, we've said this before. They do such a good job of trying to create like honest, realistic family dynamics,
right?
And the ways in which they are trying to like reach out to each other, and it isn't always, you know, either spoken or communicated in the way that it was meant, or more importantly, understood or received in the way it was meant. But you do see them across the episode, and certainly at the end when Claire like offers her, you know, makes this offer of watching a movie together, it seems like they are at least receiving the message that they are trying, and that,
right, you know, that's a right big step. Right. I mean, it all gets spurred by the fact that, you know, Claire is kind of in her mandatory counseling now that she brought a foot to school, which I guess is what happens, and this poor like school counselor who has to you know, work at five different schools.
Yeah, he was like, I'm putting my foot down before I leave to the next school. Yeah. You have to help your mom. I was wondering, I was like, is this good? Is this good?
Yeah.
Advice? Like,
yeah.
I was thinking he was going to say, it's not your job to help her. But, you know, clearly, I guess he sees that she wants to. So he's like, why don't you try?
Yeah. No, I think that it's sweet. But, you know, the scene where we have Ruth come into counseling, we see just how like limited Ruth is as a mother. Like, you know, the counselor's trying to say like, Claire's expressed that there was a time when the family was happy. And like, Ruth is like, Ruth just says like, I grew up in a 2-room apartment over a barber shop and spent my teenage years taking care of my grandmother after both of her legs were amputated. Life's hard.
Life's hard. I hear her voice, and it's so the way like she like very quickly jumps in pitch and volume at random times and then like recedes back again is very
it's really good. Yeah, it's like, you know, Ruth is really trying, and she tries to, you know, she rents the movies, like that doesn't really work out. They both don't, you know, she's trying to find ways to bond with her daughter in her own limited way. You know, I love like some of the you know, really timely references here, like going when they go to Ruth's cousin's house, they watch Gilmore Girls and eat KFC. Is that like the ultimate girls' night, Ariel?
I guess so. I mean, I know Gilmore Girls is a beloved property by many, and I have dabbled in it in the, you know, back when it was in its prime. But this is so clearly not their thing, and they're making the best at it. And it's really interesting to watch both of them watch the other two, the cousin and the daughter, and like their relationship and their ways of showing and being supportive and you know, being affectionate. And it just feels so foreign and alien to them. And it's really interesting to watch them both in their own very specific ways to their own personalities rub up against that of like, okay, well, we're definitely not that. Like, they're looking for ways, for ways to like be more communicative with each other and like bond. And they're able to identify not that. It's like when you're in college and you're like, okay, I know I don't want to major in that because that sucks.
Right. It's like, yeah, it's like you look at these two women and you wonder, like, what do they have in common? Like, how is Claire Ruth's daughter? What's the connective tissue there? And I don't, and it's still like, we might not see it yet. Like, I don't see the complementarity, but we know that they're not this. Whatever they have, whatever they are, it's not, you know, Hannah and Ginny. Like, I love a Scrabble scene in terms of revealing things about characters. I've also been rewatching The Sopranos recently, and when Jackie Jr. plays Scrabble with Meadow, it's like one of my favorite scenes. But like, just seeing the words that they spell, like Claire spells hell and then Ginny makes it hello.
She can't help herself. She's like, I have to make it positive, right? She has to, she has to drag her mom to spin to make her feel better. She has to invite Claire and Ruth to spin to make them feel better. She has to change the word to make the word feel better. Like, she can't just leave well enough alone. And as she says, endorphins really are nature's antidepressants. Which is probably true, but like,
I mean, look, like, exercise doesn't hurt, you know, it definitely helps. But you know, not everybody has to go spinning with Derek. And then the other thing is, like, you know, Claire and Ruth have also, like, just gone through this death, and like they're grieving together, and like the fact that both of these like women have this kind of like phony, detached, like, you know, they're not like authentically experiencing any of the more uncomfortable emotions. It's like, I think that that's another piece where like Claire and Ruth can recognize, like, you know, like at one point Ginny says, oh, the death of a loved one is right up there with moving and getting fired. And it's like, and both Claire and Ruth are just like, no, there's actually like this real loss, and I'm not going to just, you know, like Woman's Magazine gloss over it in this like very cheerful, phony way.
Yeah, that like the toxic positivity of that specific moment and that specific sentiment of like equating the different levels of stress of like jobs versus losing someone is like really not well met by them. And again, it's like them bonding over finding common ground on what not to do. And you know, it is a little, you know, sad and to watch Ginny in the sense of like, she's just trying to be helpful. And like, we all have our roles within families, right? And she obviously has like created this role for herself and put this pressure on herself, but you know, it's not their cup of tea. And thankfully they realize that, and they don't have to go to spin class.
They don't have to go to spin. Yeah. And one thing that these women like have in common is their sadness. You know, at the end when like when Claire says like my mom is just so sad, and she really like cares, like she really has empathy for that. And I think that, you know, Claire also like recognizes that sadness. I do want to say like Claire, I think, is like tremendously mature in this episode. You know, like when she does when Ruth, first of all, like I did think it was like a little bit like Ruth didn't have to tell Claire that she was having an affair, but it seems like, you know, something in the experience that they had with their like sleepover in San Bernardino was that Ruth didn't want to be phony. She wanted like to have a truthful relationship with her daughter. And I thought that, like, you know, we've been a little bit worried about Claire in the last couple of episodes with her like flirting with, you know, gang members and stealing feet and all of that. But I thought that, like, when she says, you know, I'm 17, I have to live my own life and figure things out on my own, that's normal. I know that stealing a foot is weird, but so is living in a house where there's a foot available to steal. Like, I think Claire is like showing a lot of self-awareness here, and also sort of communicating to her mom, like, I know that I'm acting out, but you don't have to worry about me. I'm trying to figure things out, and some of that has to be on my own. Like, I felt like there's just a ton of maturity and like genuine care and communication with her mother happening here. And I was very impressed with Claire.
Yeah. And it's any progress is progress, but like a very honest, sought after progress and like earned progress here from, again, her being honest. And I love the point that you pointed to of her, you know, speaking, you know, we get the moment where she and the guidance counselor are speaking with Ruth there, but then later on when Claire is speaking to her guidance counselor alone, and like you said, and there's so much empathy there and love, like that's what, that's the true that's one of the true ways in which we see Claire express her love. It's like she's genuinely worried about her mom, and not just like worried because she's worried that she has to deal with something as far as her mom. She just wants her mom to not be as sad. And we perceive, we see how Claire perceives her mother, especially in that moment where like they separate and then Ruth walks into the kitchen and kind of like just stands there looking out into nothingness and takes off her sweater. And Claire's like, oh, that sucks. Mom looks really sad. And that like very human ability and burden sometimes of like you observe this thing and now you feel the weight of it. And especially when you're that age, you don't know what you can do, what you should do to make it better. And like you said, she finds a way. It's baby steps, right? It's all about making an effort. And she does that.
Love that for them.
They're great.
In 10 days, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Better for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Speaking of great, we can talk about Brenda's parents.
Oh, my goodness.
And good old Nate, who is not ready for any of this. I mean, they first meet, right? Like, Brenda and Nate are in the pool together, and Brenda's parents show up, and I'm sorry, I can't help but like be immediately suspicious of Brenda to be like, well, you said that you weren't going to be back till the end of the weekend. And she's like, it's Sunday. It is the end of the weekend. And Brenda, to her credit, does seem genuinely like, oh, this sucks that they showed up. But like, we have seen Brenda do, I think the generous read would be like suspicious things, or like kind of opportunistic with some of these interactions. And I couldn't help but think, like, did Brenda like know that they were going to show up? Was she counting on it, you know, for them to run into Nate like that?
Look, we cannot put a single thing past Brenda here, that this like was not completely contrived and orchestrated by her. Yeah, and like her parents are immediately like way too much. It's like Brenda is too much and her parents are too much. And you know, I'm like watching in the Discord, like people that are having their first watch experience with this show. And actually my friend, one of my friends, Bill the Chemist, who is the official chemistry correspondent for the Lessons in Chemistry pod, if anybody's listening to that, ooh, is also watching the show for the first time. And I feel like, you know, a lot of that conversation is like, oh my gosh, like Brenda is way too much. She's way over the top. She's a cliche. And I do think that like that some of that, I do think that that's fair criticism. And you and I have spent a lot of time like, you know, kvetching about Brenda on this very pod. Mm-hmm. So it's fair. And if this is a lot for you, I think that, you know, the Chenoweths are going to be a lot for you. Like they're immediately a lot. If we thought that Brenda was a little bit heavy handed with the psychoanalyzing, her mom does the exact same thing. Like when Nate asks for a bourbon, she's like, oh, like manly, but not pretentious. Like it's just like.
Yeah. And even the way that she is like watching Nate in the pool, Brenda's mom, like there's something about like she's kind of leering at him. She's like, yeah. Oh, hey. And like Brenda gets out of the pool and then Nate is just kind of left there and he might as well be naked. Like he just feels mm-hmm. so vulnerable and he's like, oh god, like meeting the parents is always like a stressful, you know, social experiment mm-hmm. you might call it, to the point of the Brenda of it all. And it really seems like Brenda's mom is like, you know, interested in Nate, thinks he's attractive, but she's like the force of nature seemingly in the relationship between Brenda's parents. Like the father comes off as very kind of I wouldn't say that he's like inert as a character or that he's kind of useless, but I think he definitely is comfortable taking the backseat and allowing Brenda's mom to be fully herself.
Yeah.
I think
Bernard and what is her name again? I'm like, for it's escaping me.
It's
at the
like
moment.
Mindy. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
It's a name like that. It's Margaret.
Margaret and Bernard. Yeah. I mean, so these characters, they're famous psychiatrists. I think mm-hmm. that they're in LA. I think they have celebrity clientele, so they're obviously like very well off. We can definitely see where a Brenda comes from these two parents. Like her mother has like a little bit of this like intrusive and like a little bit like seductive or flirtatious kind of manner to her, in the same way that Brenda is like very forward like mm-hmm. that. They invite, so immediately when Nate meets them, it's so funny. Like, I feel like he's just very like pitch perfectly like, oh, I got to go and study for a test. It's like, this is like all of like a 35-year-old man
yep.
who's like meeting his girlfriend's parents for the first time and acting exactly like my boyfriend when I was 17. Like when mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I got to go.
Yeah, I have a big test.
Oh, thanks for the peanut butter and jelly, Mrs. Chenoweth. I got to go. Like he's very much not about like meeting them or talking to them. He clearly doesn't want to go to this dinner. But then like the absolute level of insanity, like we talked about Brenda showing up an hour early for dinner and how outrageous that was. But the fact that Nate shows up and it's just a two-on-one dinner with Brenda's parents.
This is an ambush. Like it's almost like Brenda took her hour that she appeared at the previous dinner early and like taxed that against this dinner. It's like, well, I was already an hour early, so I'm not even going to show up to this other mm-hmm. dinner. It's crazy. It's like so beyond the pale for me. I don't know what I would do. Like, I think probably one of the worst things Nate could do in that situation, at least as far as like trying to save the relationship, is just leave. But like mm-hmm. that would be my first instinct, is I'm gonna run away. Like I'm just not gonna, why do I have to sit through this? They already ambushed us kind of, in a way, you know, showing up, although that's arguably Brenda's fault slash her manipulation.
Well, the whole thing is Brenda's fault, because, like, even if we do, like, you know, she doesn't tell Nate that it's just going to be him.
Right, right. And she's, her parents. She's obviously aware of it, right?
And then there's a little bit of, you know, we don't, like, Brenda says that it was her mom's idea. Brenda's mom says that this was Brenda's idea. Like, we don't know which of those accounts is more accurate. But in either way, like, Brenda very willingly allowed this to happen if she didn't orchestrate this happening.
Right, at best.
Even if your parents are, like, the most, like, wonderful, pleasant people to be around, like, I would not subject this on, like, I even feel bad. Like, my husband, who I have been with for over 20 years, who I've been married to for 10 years, I still don't leave him alone with my family if I can help it.
There was this.
If that's gonna happen, I'm like, I prepare everybody for what is involved.
Yes, like, you do the responsible, like, kind, human thing.
And I try to minimize it as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Like, but so the fact that, like, after a month or two, that Brenda just, like, lets this happen, and that they think it's a good idea, it's, like, just so bizarre. It's like, Nate needs, like, this. There's so many red flags, Ariel. There's so many red flags. Like, nobody, like, no,
it's Nate, just red flags. It's just red flags.
No, you cannot say that, like, I didn't see the signs. Like, this is Nate, it is just willingly, like, walking into this, which is what I love about this dumb character, that he does this. And it's, like, so believable that this guy would allow himself to get wrapped up in what is clearly, like, a toxic and terrible thing.
There's this like stupid, like, TikTok or reel going around that I saw the other day of, like, the caption is, like, when my significant other is meeting my parents, because, you know, obviously we're about to be in holiday season, and it's just a video of Dumbledore talking to Harry, and it's like, if I tell you to run, run. If I tell you to hide, if I tell you to leave me alone and save yourself, you must do it. And I was like, yes, wow. I have never felt so safe.
Wow. Yeah, and then, like, when Nate comes back and, like, to Brenda's house, and it's just, like, I mean, he's, like, very justifiably angry, like, what the, like, WTF, like, that was an ambush, what happened? And then he's like, I felt like a lab rat. And then she's like, that's what they do. And I'm like, yeah, Brenda.
She's like, yeah. Well, yeah, welcome to the club. That's what they did my whole life. So, like, I don't want to be a part of that. And I thought that it would be better if I just wasn't there. And it was like, better for who? Better for her. But, like, what the to your point, Nate confronts her and her immediate reaction is, like, indignancy. And I'm just like, what?
She's how, like, is, yeah, she they mad? Suck. Why imagine is... how I feel. And it's just like, no, Brenda, like, you did not have to subject this to another person.
You didn't
have to put him through this. Like, if you it is like important for, you know, if you have like at some point in a relationship, it is important to integrate that person into your family. But if you hate your family and you think they're nefarious and toxic, then everybody, like, let's all just get away from them. Let's not go and swim in their pool. Let's not, like, ambush our new boyfriend. Come on, Brenda.
Yeah, there's a way in which, like, you would hope, like, if she's really as upset about these things as she is putting forth to Nate, it's like, well, you're the one putting yourself in these situations that, like, are, you know, you're trying to, you say that you're acting, at least, like, you're trying to escape their orbit, but you're like purposely putting yourself in their orbit at all times, or at least in this episode. And it's you know, Brenda, what's what? Because I don't know.
Yeah, she's like a 35-year-old woman, Ariel, and she's acting like a teenager.
Like a child. Like, yeah, a even child. Like you said, the pool thing is, like, so spot on. And, like, she's, you know, there's, like, that forbidden component of, like, these two adults, like, in the parents' pool, and then they show up. It's like, oh my God, we all really do regress to our teenage selves when our parents are around. It's awful, but mostly awful for, it seems like it's lose-lose for Nate. Like, no matter what happens,
it's bad. we do have to point out a few things that we learn about Brenda in this scene, because at some point Nate's like, all right, let me just get the dirt on what's up with this weirdo that I'm dating. So he asks about the Nathaniel tattoo and finds out that it is a reference to this children's book that like was important to Brenda and her brother, who I'm going to guess we know enough that they're 3-4 years apart probably in age from this story. We also find out that she's like a genius, and because she tested so at such a high level of IQ, they like put her under intense psychiatric and academic like psychological scrutiny. It's like this whole thing isn't clear. Like, it sounds like the IQ was the driver of all of this, but it's also probably there were probably other behavioral issues as well, especially like given the way that she kind of acts out with with her psychologists and psychiatrists. And like, we get these kind of like, it looks like almost like documentary footage of a child, like from, you know, of Brenda as a child. So there's some, like, again, the show's surrealistic elements there. And Brenda is the subject of a very popular book, Ariel, called Charlotte, Light and Dark.
Light and Dark. It's interesting. She's like a, you know, so there's a drawing on the front of a girl, and like the way that her family is like very cartoonish. It kind of makes sense to your point about like when she was a child and what kind of, you know, things that would have caused her parents to want to put her in this kind of situation. Like, clearly they are so quick to react to people. We see it happen with Nate. We see it in the few interactions with Brenda. Like, they are quick to put like a name or a phrase, like a scientific idea on a thing, like separate the humanity from the science and just be like, oh, you said this thing, or you have exhibited this behavior. And that automatically equates to you are this kind of person.
They talk like a psychoval. Everything is like pathologizing and diagnosing.
Yes. And so like sterilized and like just very, like you said, it's scientific in a way that like for a child must be so weird to have to go through, and just like not you lack understanding, you lack context, and you're being treated. I mean, it sounds like they were treating her as a lab rat way before they ever put her into that situation where she's being studied. It's not great. I mean, these memories that Brenda is having, you know, like you said, we get like this kind of dream/documentary footage of her when she was a child. And it's like, it's dark, it's dreary. She's clearly not enjoying herself. Like, this does not seem like a fun time for a child.
It's disturbed. Like, and I feel like this whole thing is like evocative. Like, I've said that I'm sort of like roughly Claire's age. And like, I feel like this kind of Charlotte Light and Dark, like when I was like a teenager, I read Sybil, which was the book about like, you know, that the Sally Field movie ended up being based on, that was about multiple personality disorders, and like the virgin suicides is like a fiction. But like, I feel like there was all of this, and it probably still is like popular with adolescent girls, but these like psychologically disturbed stories about like and so I feel like this is very evocative of like that kind of book, of that kind of moment. And there are these like stories in real life about the children of like famous psychologists. There's this couple, Sandra and Daryl Bem, who are both famous psychologists, and one of them studied gender studies, and they like deliberately tried to raise their children without any notion of gender. And then when their children like grew up, they like talked about like just how confused they were in the world because they weren't prepared for it. Like, so there are these stories about children of these academic psychologists and psychiatrists who end up as adults like expressing all of the ways that their parents like kind of not having a good boundary between their work and their family, and using their children as subjects has affected them.
Yeah, and then they have to like try to deprogram themselves, or like it's sad. And like obviously there are things. Actually, I can't think of any, but I'm sure there was the rare situation where it was like helpful for them to understand, like, oh, she's going through this, but really it's just this. But again, it's all in the way that they seemingly treated her and interacted with her that was just like not warm. You know, a child needs to feel like they are, you know, obviously loved, but like accepted and understood. Yeah, yeah. And there wasn't really much of that. There was the understanding of like, wow, you're special. Let's prod you with like the proverbial electric, you know, prod and like, react.
Yeah. And Brenda like says, like, she feels like they made it all about them. But you know, anyway, it's interesting, like, you know, and the Nathaniel and Isabel book that that Brenda and Billy like had as such an important thing is about two orphans who have adventures. So it's clear that like in Brenda's internal life, the idea of being free of all of these adults, being free of her parents, was this kind of escapist fantasy. So it's all like, it's all very, it all kind of feeds into what we see in Brenda and helps us sort of connect the dots of the behavior we've already observed in her relationship with Nate. I will say, like, as much as I really like love this show and enjoy the characters, like, I know that people who are viewing this for the first time are seeing the Brenda character as being like a little bit cartoonish or caricature of what this type of character would be like. And I do think that the parent, like her parents, also feed into that. And I completely get that. And I agree. I think part of it is it pushes some of this for comedy, especially with like Brenda's mother as a character. I think she's supposed to be exaggerated in an almost comedic way.
Yeah. A very like cringe, uncomfortable humor.
Exactly. I do think if you stick with this show in time, like Brenda becomes more fully fleshed out, which is not to say that she, you know, is muted, but I think that like nobody puts Brenda in like some drab earth tones.
She will wear
baggy khakis. I think
she loves the limited, as you've already established.
Yeah, that might have been from the Gap, or like maybe
right. The khaki itself, perhaps.
The khakis might have been from the Gap, but yeah, anyway, I think if you stick with it, like Brenda becomes like a little bit more three-dimensional. And I think that the show is starting to build towards that in this episode.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, not everything is for everyone, but you know, I think if there's interest there, you know, stick with it. If you're having a reaction, arguably, that's its own prize. Yes. That's its own thing that you
I do have to point out one more thing before we leave Nate and Brenda. Mm-hmm. When Nate asks her if she burned down the house across the street, she does not say no, Ariel.
She was like, "You really think that I would do that?" And she's like, and then she winks at the camera. No.
Yeah.
If and only that, breaking the fourth wall, Brenda.
Yeah, no,
she's scarier, Brenda. I don't want to think
the
about
narrator,
that.
Who's a I'm trying, who's
Arrested
narrator?
Development, Ron Howard.
Ron Howard comes in and says, he did think she burned down.
He did burn that. And then he would say, and also I would like to point out, she did not say no. So yeah, the mystery of the house continues. It's I feel like the house across the street is officially haunted, and it's like Brenda's ghost lighting it on fire. That's certainly what Nate thinks, and I think that's what Nate wants us to think, or at least the show wants us to think. But speaking of a male Fisher, we have the other male Fisher, David, or should I say Deacon David.
Deacon Dave. Oh my goodness.
Well, I like that. Deacon Dave. He's so cash. He's like he hangs out with, he's like, look, with I'm a all the constituents.
I'm a cool deacon.
Yeah.
I'm like the deacon in a hoodie who like shoots hoops. I feel like that's how you know it's a cool priest. When the priest is like wearing a hoodie and like shoots hoops on the basketball court, that's the cool priest.
Yeah, and he's like, Yeah, I'm gay. So what? That's cool. I mean, okay. David would never.
Is it cool, though? That's what I want to ask you, Ariel. Like, so does this priest know that David is gay and invite him to be the deacon knowingly?
I mean, it's fascinating to me. I was a person I'm trying to remember where this would have come up, like the church, but I was an altar boy.
You were a deacon.
I was a deacon when I was 12 years old, and people were coming to me with problems, and I was like, whoa, ma'am, I have no idea what you're talking about. No, I was an altar boy, and I was involved in the church through my family. And there is this, like, you know, at some point you come of age, and then you're like, okay, am I fully accepted in this community for being gay? Is this mm-hmm. something that I have to, like, live in secret? And there's unfortunately a way in, like, which that mirrors just, like, society at large. But mm-hmm. to the question and to the point of this other person in the church, the priest, I believe, or the pastor.
Yeah, I think, and I think he's Father Jack, I think he yes. calls him. Yeah.
The way that he, I think the most interesting clue to answer your question mm-hmm. is when David reveals specifically which church he was going to with yes. David. And he's like, oh no, it was so-and-so church in West Hollywood.
Yeah.
And then the kind of beats of understanding washing over him and being mm-hmm. and seemingly just, you know, breezing right by it. And I think, to your question, I think he absolutely does know and proposes it to David anyway. And I think that to me is a good thing. I mean, we'll have to see going forward, you know, how if at all that kind of comes up again, or how mm-hmm. this, you know, knowledge that he has about David will matter ultimately. But mm-hmm. I think for sure he proposes it with the full knowledge of David's situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so why do you think it's so important to David that he becomes a deacon in his family's church in St. Bartholomew, which I'm guessing is an Anglican church? Mm-hmm. Those are the vibes I'm getting, because I don't think it's Catholic. The Fishers don't have a Catholic vibe. No, and at some yeah. point, Tracy Montrose Blair, who we have not talked about yet, says that she was raised Catholic, and that's why she likes this church. And so the Anglican church is a Protestant church that has a lot of the same kind of ceremony and rituals mm-hmm. as a Catholic church. So that's what I'm guessing. But anyway, like, why do you think it's so important to David that he is a deacon, and as opposed to, like, staying with the congregation that he and Keith are a part of, that is, like, explicitly welcoming of LGBT community?
Yeah. And it's extra interesting to consider it in the context of, he was perfectly happy to be going to this church with yeah. Keith, the other church. And it wasn't really until his mother asked him to please accompany her to church mm-hmm. sometimes. My recollection was that it wasn't, I want you to come to church with me every day. It's, I want you to take some time for me. So it seemed to me at the time, certainly, that he could have gone to church with Ruth, maybe, like, say, once a month, and then continue mm-hmm. to do what he wanted to do. I want to believe that Ruth would want him to have whatever relationship with any church that he has, mm-hmm. as long as it was some church. And it's, you know, I really don't think it's just his salesman shark mind of mm-hmm. like, oh, this is going to be good for business. I do mm-hmm. think that's, like, a small percentage right. of it. I think that's just, like, a very objective fact. Like, this could lead to business. But I think most importantly for David, he wants so badly to be accepted mm-hmm. for who he is, which is kind of ironic, to be accepted fully, to be respected. And, you know, something that neither of those things is he really in his family. I mean, you could argue it's by his own doing that he's not completely open with his family, but he doesn't really feel respected, I would say, by his entire family. Certainly, like, he sees himself as, like, the new ownership, he's keeping the funeral home going, even though he's, like, a 50-50 partnership mm-hmm. with Nate, really his operation. And I think the idea of, like, having a position of authority within the church, which is, like, a universally regarded, certainly by these churchgoers, universally regarded position, a respected position, he can't help himself. And it's so interesting to watch how quickly he has moved from, oh, I really enjoy this church with Keith, to be like, oh, I have this position now that I could ascend to, yeah, of power. And like, I kind of need that. And then when Keith is like, I want to come with you, he's like, I don't know if that's quite right. Like, Keith is always trying. We've seen him in so many instances, yeah, meet David where he is, right, meet David halfway. And David's like, I want it my way. Like, right, I want to set the parameters of our relationship and basically my entire life. And it's human. It's unfortunately, like, it's not always kind to Keith. And the worst part is he doesn't even see always, yeah, the ways in which he is being unkind to Keith. But I think the idea that he, again, the respect thing and the being seen a certain way by the community means, mm-hmm, more to him than he probably realizes. Right.
And it's not just the community. It's like the church that he was raised in, the, yes, deaconship
that his father
held. It's like, I think it's the internalized sense that David has that if his father knew that he was gay, he would have rejected him. And that maybe his father did know a little, mm-hmm, bit, and that's why he doesn't feel accepted. So I feel like it's very much this internalized part of David that comes from this idea that he could never live up to be the man that his father would have wanted him to be. And that's why he needs to stay at the funeral home and not go to law school. And, you know, that's why he needs to be the deacon of the church that he was raised in and not pursue this other congregation with Keith. It's like he's looking for this acceptance, mm-hmm, from a dead man that he's like never going to get. And I think it comes from this fact that like he very, very much like believes that, like, has shame that he is not the man that his father was, which I think has to do with, you know, the fact that he is gay and, mm-hmm, that's like primarily it. And that even if Nate, like, you know, didn't do anything that his father would have wanted him to, like, you know, didn't live up to his father in so many ways. He moved away. He didn't, right, have the same kind of career. He's not, doesn't care about the church. Like, Nate is just de facto, because he's straight, you know, yeah, more acceptable in those eyes. So I feel like all of these things for David are trying to prove or get some validation to fill that sense of disapproval that he has for himself. And like, the sad thing is he's never going to get that. And Keith sees that and recognizes, mm-hmm, that. And, you know, and like the fact that Nate can't, like, or the fact that David can't even go, like, all Keith wants is for David to come with him to his hot gay firefighter and policeman convention.
Mm-hmm.
And David won't even go. Like, they can come back early. He can still go to the stupid church. Like, he won't, he's not making any concessions to like live an open life with Keith the way Keith, yeah, so desperately wants. Although he does make what I think is like a pretty significant step in this episode that Keith should like probably take, like, maybe, I mean, I get why Keith is as pissed as he is, but it's, mm-hmm, also a pretty huge step for David,
absolutely,
to be open about his relationship with Keith in front of Nate.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge moment. And I didn't think it was going to happen this early. Mm-hmm. And the way he just grabs Keith, it's like so sweet and affectionate. And, you know, you think it's so, you feel David's like, mm-hmm, panic when, mm-hmm, he sees Nate and he's like, oh my God, my worlds are colliding. Mm-hmm. I don't like this. You know, the again, to the point of like control that he likes to have, mm-hmm, over his life and over like the perception of who he is. We see him do this really lovely thing and then Nate be like a total buffoon, a bumbling buffoon.
Oh, he's such a butthead. He's like,
oh, great. Awesome. I love. Like, it's just
like, okay, it is accepting. Away. So that's good. So Nate gets,
yes,
credit,
right,
for,
right,
that.
Right. It is accepting.
But he's also like a butthead.
Yes. It's like the sweetest form of butthead that you could be in, mm-hmm, in this specific situation, yeah, of like, oh my God, that's great. Okay. I have to go.
Like, I also love how like every woman who sees David and Keith together is just like, Keith is hot. Like when Claire is like, that cop is hot. Then like when
Brenda lingers, like Nate walks away awkwardly and Brenda's like, it was nice seeing you, David. Yeah. She's just like the normal one. And she makes the comment to Nate, like, Keith
is... No, Nate says, I think David is gay. And then Britt is like, I think David is lucky.
Yes, and no shit, Nate. Like, I think David is gay.
What a butthead.
Like, what were the clues that you used to make that conclusion, Nate? And I do, you know, to the David and Keith point again, I think their conversation afterwards in the parking lot of the church, I believe, is really interesting when he's like, David is like presenting, this is where David kind of breaks the news to Keith, seemingly to himself as well. I don't think he had like really thought about it before. Keith is like, oh, I want to come to church with you. That's great. You'll be a deacon. And he's like, I don't think it's a good idea. And David's like, you know, he makes this point of tolerance. Like we are tolerated here. And I love Keith's response. I resent the notion that we need to be tolerated.
Yeah.
Which I would retweet. I would echo that statement. I love this like firm ground that Keith is able to stand on at all times, especially in the face of like David's lack of acceptance for himself and for his entire community, certainly for his relationship. And he is always holding David to task in that regard, in a way that I think is helpful. Like I don't think he pushes too hard based on the parameters of their relationship. And he's tired. He's already said to David, like, I understand you have to go through your process. I'm like, quote unquote, like on a different part of the spectrum from you as far as like, you know, fully owning myself and claiming my identity and being out to people. But I won't go back in the closet for you. And this is that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the hate the sin, love the sinner, the operative word is hate. And like Keith doesn't accept that there's anything about their life and their love together that should be the object of hate. David calls out Keith for like betraying the African American community by being part of the LAPD, which is not really his place to be speaking to.
Yeah, and it's not like, it's not really like a one-to-one comparison. I would say it's not a good faith comparison. Yeah. It's, you know, David as usual is like being so reactive, you know, remnants of his mother, the way she is like so quick to just react. Right. And needs to like bring another issue forward because you're shining too much light. It's making me uncomfortable. You're shining too much light on this one specific flaw about me. Yeah. I need to like throw something back at you that you now have to deal with.
But this is like, this is a tiff between our dear Keith and David. No sooner did he come out to, and then later when, you know, at the church, when Nate says, oh, why isn't Keith here? And then David like completely denies that, you know, that they're in a relationship and says he's just a friend.
Wild. I mean, this is Keith's words, you know, come to life. He's like one step forward, one gigantic leap back, or however he puts it. This, we're literally seeing David do it. The idea that he's trying to gaslight his brother, like, no, that's not what it is. You misunderstood why I grabbed his hand. Like, what? Who? He's just asking you where he is. He didn't even say anything. He's not accusing you of anything outside of what you have tried to communicate to him. It's always very frustrating to watch David in these situations, but it's mostly just kind of sad.
It is sad. It is sad.
Them to be close.
Boy, yeah, this family, they just need to watch The Nutty Professor together like Ruth and Claire did, and then or go to spin class, and that
or
would
go to spin class, or watch Sandra Oh's takes again from when she's talking about her experience with the dearly departed and how warm she was and how sweet, and she's saying like the most like sexually charged
Ruth is very uncomfortable with
Ruth
all
is taken aback. What is happening in
Ruth,
there?
A lot of cunnilingus happening for Ruth in the last couple of episodes.
Too much, frankly, especially in that one room or that one area. Much. It's called the viewing room, but oh my god.
what a view.
What a lovely view. And what a view I hope that we have provided about this episode, an open book. I always try to be an open book with you, as I already said, Amanda.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate it. You know, Ariel, you are always light and never dark. Where can our listeners keep up with everything else that you have going on?
I am on Twitter at that other Ariel, usually retweeting a podcast that I'm on. I'm covering movies every week with Grace, Push Recaps Theater, and just finished up Tales from the Loop, which is a wonderful little sci-fi show that Amazon Prime did. I was covering that with Grace and our friend DM Philly. And Grey's Anatomy, as I usually mention, somehow Sandra I find a way. Sandra Oh makes an appearance. It's really hard for me not to. Chappelle and I had Jess Sterling on as a guest, and we did a doctor draft this month. So look out for that.
Amazing. And you can keep up with everything that I am doing on Twitter, where I am at Dr. Amanda R. Right now, I am also covering the aforementioned Lessons in Chemistry, Apple TV Plus show. Listen to me and Dr. Melissa talk about that every week. And Grace Leader and I are covering Nathan Fielder's scripted series, The Curse. And I'm really, really into it. People are remarking that it's a challenging watch, but I think it's actually quite brilliant. And Grace and I have been having a blast breaking that down. So also check that out also on Post Show Recaps. And Ariel, you and I will be back in a few days.
Yes.
To talk more about 6 Feet Under Season 1, Episode 6. And this is called The Room.
Ooh, I wonder if it's that same viewing room.
Oh, hi, Mark.
I can't wait to meet Mark.
I can't wait. Well, and until then, dear listeners, rest in peace.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.